Well, cheers, everyone, and welcome once again to PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host, Kelly Wells, and Justin's not here with me this week, but we got the others back in the fold, so we'll see what kind of new perspectives we have for you this week in a show that was very slowly getting some things in place. First, let's go ahead and say hi to our other two guys. Tom, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Gosh, I think it's been 3 weeks since the last time I recorded with you guys. It feels good to be back. It's been a packed couple of weeks for me. Hopefully, I can string together some coherent thoughts tonight. I cover the MLW tapings and the NXT tapings for PW Torch, and we are coming off of tapings for both of those programs. We had back-to-back NXT tapings, the first episode of which we're talking about tonight, and MLW did another set. They're getting a lot bigger. And, you know, you can always, avoid the spoilers if you want, of course, but I do try to pepper my reports with observations from actually being there live. Who was at the food trucks? Did or did not Jonathan Coachman come out and watch a match with his kid while wearing an NXT shirt? And I just wanted to get out there because I thought this was hilarious. I got the distinct pleasure of meeting Barrington Hughes before the MLW event. I got there earlier enough that he was just hanging out outside. I was totally planning on asking him for a photograph. He actually recognized me from writing the MLW reports, and he asked me for a photograph. So PWT Talks NXT is getting over, guys. I got asked for a photograph by Barrington Hughes, hashtag MILF's favorite wrestler, and it's out there somewhere. He hasn't posted it, but there is a picture that exists of a PWT Talks NXT guy with hashtag MILF's favorite wrestler, Barrington Hughes.
It's on his wall with some darts in it.
Wow, here I was thinking you were getting a little wordy, but that was worthwhile. That was kind of hidden somewhere. So all right, I'll take it. I'll take it. Harley Padgett is back with us this week too.
Hello, that's my name. In addition to this, I cover Ring of Honor for the Pro Wrestling Torch. I do written reports on ROH television and live events, and also co-host the PW Torch Tuesday live cast, Talking Honor with Emily Fear.
All right, and I am Kelly Wells. I am your host. I do the NXT tracker on the site. If you want to get a hold of us on this show, you can go ahead and email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. We will field your questions. We got just 3 questions this week. That's about, that's about what we like. So don't need too many more than that. But yeah, if you have something cool that you'd like to run by us or ask us, then go ahead. Brian Alston, one of our regulars, he got a hold of Tom last week about getting a hold of tickets for NXT. And I was thinking I would just give Tom a little opening real quick. Tom, what is your plan for getting those live tickets? How do you get into those tapings?
Stress on real quick, right? it was tough because at first, you hear about these tickets going on sale. There are rumors about how they're open to faculty of full sale first, that students get in free. Everybody says all this different stuff. You don't really know how to crack it. It was with the Mae Young Classic that I was finally like, you know what? Enough farting around with, oh, I don't know if I'm going to be able to get in. Oh, they're sold out now. I can't go. I am getting in to the Mae Young Classic. So I made sure that I paid attention to when tickets were going on sale, and I was waiting there. There's no queue or anything like there was for All In, but you just make sure that you're there right at the time that they go on sale and pick them up. You're not going to get the front row. Those are like pre-sale codes, I believe, and they almost always go to the same people. The website is ticketforce.com/NXT tickets. I'm not looking at that on a screen right now. I'm recalling that from memory. It's something involving Ticketforce and NXT tickets. So if you Google those, it'll definitely come up. I would not recommend going to WWE's website. It's overly confusing, in my opinion. But honestly, the best source has become the reason I mentioned Mae Young Classic is because by buying the tickets there, I got on an email chain. So now I'm in their system and they'll occasionally email me when tickets are available. But follow the official WWE NXT account on Twitter because they post whenever the tickets are about to go on sale. You got to pay attention for it. You got to look out for it. But then just set a reminder in your phone that at 10 a.m. the next day, it's usually on a Friday, to log on and pick up those tickets.
And I am looking at your email to Brian right now, and it is www.nxttickets.ticketforce.com. So you were right, except backwards. That is
scratch
what you
that
said
reverse
to him.
It.
Yeah, strike that, reverse it, and that's what we got. Let's talk about our main event. The first time, I believe, that Danny Burch has scored a pin in our main event. Maybe the first time that Danny Burch has scored a pin on NXT TV. I'm not sure if that's true. Pete Dunne, Danny Burch, Oney Lorcan versus the Undisputed Era. This got a decent amount of time, even though we got four matches. But yeah, lots going on here. A lot of storyline implications, potentially. And yeah, before I go too deep with it, Harley, what did you think of this?
I love this match. I thought this was like fast paced. Everybody got to show their strengths. I mean, I've watched Kyle O'Reilly for years now, 6 years, 7 years, longer in ROH, here in NXT. And still, like, every time he starts a match, I'm like, wow, I forgot how good Kyle O'Reilly is. Yeah. From the little things like getting down onto his knees so that, you know, his opponent can't grab him around the waist or can't grab his legs, and kicking him with his shins when he's in like a crab position, to just so smoothly transitioning from arm holds into leg locks and all these other things, mixing in his more martial arts strikes than that. Like, constantly impressed by him. Everybody looked great here, though. I mean, Cole probably had the least amount to do, I'd guess, out of everybody. But even, yeah, I loved all of it. A couple of moments, very Bullet Club-esque, and I think ROH fans will know what I mean. I'm thinking of the spot where all three Undisputed members had their hands snapped at the same
right.
time.
Yep.
And the point at the end with the submissions, just the idea of guy gets you in a submission, so you kick him off into the other guy who's in a submission in order to break that up. That was very Young Bucks-ish, which makes sense because Cole used to be a member of Bullet Club, and Roddy and Kyle battled with them many times over the years.
I've been watching a ton of New Japan lately, and this was like, even today I watched about 4 or 5 hours of New Japan before I watched this show, and it was a seamless transition. I'll give it that. It was it definitely felt familiar, but in a good way. As far as Cole not doing much, I think that's the idea, right? With Cole, I think that's intentional. It's I know that it's not necessarily the greatest thing to fade into the background, but I think that what his character is trying to do is a little of that. And I guess, you know, we've had tons of debates about Cole, and at least Justin's not here to have that debate. but yeah, we've spent tons of time on that. I think that's intentional. But Tom, what'd you think of this one?
It was a lot of fun. You guys basically covered the reasons. I also was buying into a lot of the false finishes, and we've got several underlying storylines between these guys to follow. I'll just simply accentuate the fact that I love watching Kyle O'Reilly in a ring right now. I'm such a, when it comes to what I look for in wrestlers, I'm so much more about character than work in the ring. But Kyle O'Reilly is just like, let that bell ring, because I want to see whatever that man does. You know, my eyes always gravitate to him when he's in a match. You know, a match like this with six people, I'm watching him the whole time, because he's just he's really something. So. Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, I'm with you on Kyle. He's just, he's ridiculous. You forget for moments at a time that that the whole thing is a work when Kyle is working, because he's just so smooth, just such a natural. And I think that as a viewer, you're constantly surprised by him, because he doesn't, and I know I've brought this up before, but he just doesn't look like a pro wrestler. Like, I grew up in the 80s and 90s, and like, pro wrestlers look like something. They look like Ultimate Warrior or even Hercules or all these guys. They don't look like Kyle O'Reilly, even though maybe they should. And so he surprises me every time, even though by this point I am and should be used to that. But yeah, just an absolutely all around great worker. And I don't know if a singles run is in the cards for him, but I'm sure that it would work out if it was. But yeah, that's our main event. I don't think, you know, it's a six man and the winners don't matter a lot. So, you know, what is there really to say about that? So I guess we'll move on. But yeah, go ahead.
Six guys in the match. Four of them are champions, and the person who got the pinfall, not a champion.
Yeah.
Is that a, like, my, right away, my thinking is Lorcan and Burch should be in consideration for a tag title match now, right?
I hope so.
Because they pinned the tag champs.
They won't win that match, but I think that that will be a great stopgap match. Would love for them to get a takeover match, to get 15, 20 minutes in the ring with Undisputed Era. I don't think that will happen, but on the other hand, we're only 4 weeks away, so maybe they will.
Yeah, Lorcan and Burch right now aren't far removed from where Ciampa and Gargano were when they started out as a tag team, or even Gable and Jordan, right?
Yeah, those guys didn't go through a long losing period. Like these guys did. Well, you know, I guess Gabe Jordan certainly did. He was he lost a lot as a partner of Ty Dillinger. But yeah, they didn't. You know, I don't know if it's quite the same thing, but I think they have this equity built up with fans where I think fans would accept it if that's what where they went. And it's not, you know, it's not going to be the main event, so the title match can sell that show. So it doesn't matter if the tag title match is on paper underwhelming, even though in practice it will be awesome. So
yeah, and they really did a good job of focusing on like the workers and the camera did a great job of focusing on their celebration after the match. I feel like how elated they were to have finally gotten a win like that was really on full display, and it really came through. And it was probably the most focal that their tag team has been on any single episode of NXT thus far, as an important act. So that was kind of neat to see, as we've always, you know, accurately painted them with the brush of just being the job guys.
Right. Yeah. And it's always fun to see that. Anytime that happens, obviously, like the kid over Razor Ramon and everything, like,
yeah,
that first time that happens, you're just like, that was one of my, you know, that was a big markout moment. And that, you know, even when I was smart to the business at that point, and I still feel that way, because I assume some of that is legitimate happiness. And, you know,
right,
I don't
right.
know. I mean, I know these guys have been there before, so maybe it's just all, I'm sure it's all part of the work, but they make me believe, and that's good enough for me. So
Burch got the pinfall, right?
Burch did get the pinfall, yes.
So this is his second official win on NXT television.
Perfect.
I guess the other would have been over Lorcan, right?
There you go.
Yes.
They had the bar version where they feuded and then earned each other's respect, and now they were successful. Right. Well, now they're a tag team.
The only way to win was over the other. I got it. Yeah. Perfect. That was our main event. Let's talk about Ricochet and Velveteen Dream. I feel like this was a too-good-to-be-true match, and said so. My wife actually watched this show with me. She does not do that very often, but I believe she saw Ricochet's physique and changed her mind and watched the show. But
can't blame her.
Yeah, right. That's a gorgeous man. Ricochet and Velveteen Dream. These two, they had a good, 4.5 minutes-ish of action. I feel like I certainly knew that this match couldn't be totally paid off on TV, especially not in the main event slot. That's crazy. So I assume that's why they didn't pimp it last week. But good stuff here leading into the Lars Sullivan thing with now a strange handicap match. I'm not a fan of handicap matches as a rule. I get it with Lars Sullivan. And if they're only going to do one or two handicap matches a year with actual name guys, I'm fine with that. But if they get to be a crutch, if they start going on to takeovers, then it's going to be like, oh, well, this is not really the alternative to the main roster that it used to be. But Tom, you were live for this one. What do you think?
Yes, and being live, even though this was one of the earlier matches to go out, you never really know exactly where something is going to air in the chronology. So, granted, watching it on TV, it didn't have any buildup other than the, previously on. It definitely felt like, all right, I smell something. Something's up. This isn't going to get a clean finish. But watching live, it was really like, oh, wow, we're actually going to see maybe the blow off right now. And the crowd was super, super hot for it. So I know we got a question, an email question that I won't go into my response to that just yet. But I do have some thoughts on what the emailer sent in regarding Sullivan coming in. I'll tell you what, man, I have been a fan of Sullivan in the past. If you want to make me dislike a guy, have him interrupt this match, because, it's not Gargano Ciampa or anything, but you want to see this match. This was probably, when Caleb Braxton goes out at the beginning of the taping and announces some of the major matches that we have in store. That was one of the ones that was like, all right, I'm definitely invested in that because I want to see what these guys can do together. I'll cut myself off there, but I think it was a good heat magnet for Sullivan.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I'm Wade Keller, and I urge you to be sure that you're also subscribing to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast at Podcast One and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. All you have to do is search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use on your Apple or Android device to subscribe to both feeds. There's a red brand covering Raw and SmackDown every Monday night and Tuesday night, and it's downloadable a couple hours after the show. And then there's also the Wade Keller Podcast Flagship Edition on Thursdays with a rotation of co-hosts, including Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, Todd Martin, Bruce Mitchell, and others. And then there's our Interview Friday edition. Every Friday, I'm joined by a guest who has worked in the wrestling business, including ex-WWE creative team members like Kevin Eck talking about Drew McIntyre.
Drew was a young guy, and did it go to his head, and did he walk around like he was the chosen one? He did, and I was frank with him, and I said, Drew, just so you know, this is how they view you.
And Podcast One's own Christian Harloff talking about his days working for WWE and Vince McMahon specifically.
As far as their perception of him, I mean, he's the king. He walks in, and it's just, you can feel it. I mean, if the force was real, you would feel the force powering into the room when he enters.
And pro wrestlers, including NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis, also known as Magnus, talking about the challenges facing Ronda Rousey as she transitions from MMA to WWE.
Think about like the press conference and stuff like that. Someone tells them like, all right, now it's your turn to go out there, right? I'm sure if you ask Ronda, she'd probably say this moment is the result of hundreds of people's work, meticulous preparation and planning and timing and everything. And now suddenly it's like, go. And that can be very overwhelming.
Just search Wade Keller on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and read Chris Fielder's email here because that's what I was going to do at this point anyway after we were all done talking. But We've opened it up. But yeah, you're next. You're
sorry
next.
About
Don't
that.
Worry. Chris Fielder.
I got nothing to say. This segment's forgettable.
Chris Fielder, one of our new regulars, says, hey, guys, I'm so glad you guys are part of the PW Torch lineup, and this show is quickly becoming my can't-miss show of the week. That being said, I have to disagree with the overall idea that Lacey Evans' music wasn't good. In all honesty, I really miss her old music, and I don't think this new generic music suits her at all. Please bring back Hello. That's all I can remember, but it was still better than it is now. My question is, what do you guys think about NXT giving away a big matchup like Velveteen Dream versus Ricochet? I was really confused as to why this wasn't saved for a takeover event until Lars showed up. I think they gave away more than they should have when it comes to these two going one-on-one. What do you think, guys, think about this, and also what do you think about booking a match like this, knowing someone out of the blue will come in and end the match as a draw? I always hate when Raw and SmackDown do this, and I really hope NXT doesn't do this too much more in the future. Thanks again for all you guys and all you do. So I would say that I am pro what they did as long as they don't start doing this a whole lot. If this starts to be really, really obvious what they're going to do, then I won't be on board. But yes, I did know that this would not be a match that came to a full conclusion, but I thought I thought very much that this was something that was just to whet our appetites for something coming later on. And now I dare say it's more interesting than it would have been, because we've got Velveteen in Shades of Grey for a week or two. You got Ricochet in somewhat Shades of Grey. He's a face, but and then Larson in a heel role. But what is Velveteen Dream doing here? I think this is a good means to an end. I get that. As far as Lacey Evans' music, I'll say real quick, I kind of agree with you. Like, Hello was annoying in a way that I kind of became accustomed to. It was terrible in a way that I think was properly terrible. But we'll see what this new music does for me, because at this point in my life, none of the new music sinks in one time. But we'll get to Lacey. We're going to talk about her later. Harley, on this question and everything about the Ricochet Dream Sullivan segment.
Right. So when they announced the match at the start of the show, you know, I'm an educated fan like you guys. Right away, I'm going, that's not going to happen. We're not getting a match. Dream's going to attack him, Ricochet, while he's making his entrance. Something like that. Dream comes out first. So I go, okay, still not going to happen. We're going to cut to backstage. And, you know, we haven't seen Lars in a couple weeks. We haven't seen him in a long time, it feels like. Maybe they cut to backstage and Ricochet's laid out or something, and Lars is beating him up, and we won't get the match because of that. Then the match starts, and I'm thinking, okay, there's still, like, we're not getting this match. Something's gonna happen at some point. And sure enough, Lars Sullivan shows up and does his Thanos routine, as more of an all that likes to call it. What I found interesting most was Dream getting his ass kicked along with Ricochet. He didn't, like, scurry out and run away like most heels may have. He took his licks just like the good guy did. And the follow-up backstage, Dream comes up to the William Regal's office just like Ricochet and says, I want Lars Sullivan as well. Again, I'm thinking, you know, if this is someone like Miz or another type of heel like that, he might be backing off and not – he wouldn't be saying, I want a piece of that monster too. That's intriguing. That said, my best guess why they're doing a handicap match next week and not a triple threat, like, would make more logical sense, you would think. Like, I assumed, hey, here we go. Number one contender triple threat match in a couple weeks. Perfect, easy solution. Handicap match, my best guess is Dream walks out on Ricochet.
Exactly, exactly. We can't ask Tom because he's seen it already, but that's exactly where I was thinking too. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. Dream walks out, Lars squashes, well, he doesn't squash, but he beats Ricochet. That puts Lars into Aleister Black number one contender status and gives Ricochet even more reason to want a rematch with Dream at TakeOver Chicago. End scene.
Right. All right. So, yeah, Ricochet, Dream.
You can congratulate me off air, Tom.
A lot of yeah, nice segment all around by these guys, I think. Yeah, my wife was into this. She was into the acts of both the guys in the match and had seen just a little of them before. And Sullivan came out, and she was like, did I see him before? And I said, he's the guy with the lisp. But she goes, oh, yeah, right, I know him. But, yeah, she watches 5 minutes.
Recognize the 8-foot-tall hulking behemoth.
That's what I thought was so funny. She didn't recognize that. But when I said that is what she remembered. I said, yes, he's very intelligent, but he's got that whole voice thing going on. Yeah, what are you going to do? So, I think that this is going somewhere interesting for all people involved. And as always, I trust the writers of NXT because they've been on point lately. So let's go ahead.
I will say that I sorry. I'm doubly sorry because I forgot that that email also mentioned the Lacey thing, which hopefully we'll come back to. I will say that, you know, there's been the hubbub about, like, oh man, well, why am I using that word hubbub so much tonight? Anyway, people are talking like, why did they give this away? Oh, they did too much. Oh, they gave away too much of the match. I honestly feel, and I don't feel like it's talking too much out of turn to even suggest this, that Dream and Ricochet have several more gears that they can go into. Okay. So I really don't feel like we, even though what we saw tonight was appealing outside of Ricochet's springboard thing, you know how I feel about that. this, they did not give us even close to what a singles match would be between the two of them. So eventually, if slash when we do see that, I think it will be much, much more satisfying. And I would agree that I am more excited for it after seeing that indeed, like we thought they would, they do mesh very well in the ring, at least, you know, per what they did on TV tonight.
Yep. I thought this was a proper tease, and I'm more excited to see this eventual match than I was before. Definitely thought this was a proper tease. And I assume that these two are going to go at it the night before Money in the Bank. So, and if not, you know, then they're not. But I think they will. So I am excited about this. So let's go to Lacey. Lacey Evans, she faced Brandi Lauren. I don't see the live shows, so maybe Tom knows something I don't about her. I don't keep the stats, so maybe Harley knows something I don't know about her, but I don't know Brandi Lauren. Lacey beats Brandi Lauren in a short-ish match with a punch called The Woman's Right. a good name, given the character. We see something new with this character every week, which is what's so fascinating. The constant tweaking of this character. So she wins with The Woman's Right. Kairi Sane comes out and starts getting into a serious feud finally. After this, we got the Dakota Kai Nikki Cross bit, which I thought was just it was good fun. And the women, you know, once again, I think we'll just talk about them all at once because they were all in kind of one segment here. So, Harley, on the entire women's segment, how did you feel?
This is the first time I've ever liked what I saw from Lacey Evans. hate the finish. It's supposed to be like a knockout fist, but it looked just kind of like a tepid slap.
She did something to set it up, right? And the setup was fine. And then she did The Woman's Right. And maybe that's one of those things where it's like the setup is such a large part of what you do. And that's what you remember. Like Rey Mysterio did 619 leading up to Drop the Dime. And now everybody thinks 619 was his finisher, but Drop the Dime was actually his finisher. I don't know.
Yeah, well, she had like three moves in the match. And I just thought it was the weakest of the three. The slingshot elbow, nice and crisp. Really enjoyed that. Moonsault blew me away. Not in that like it was an incredible, but just it's more than I've ever seen from her before. I don't remember her doing anything like that before. And it was really fluid and it landed perfectly. And then she's followed up with this weird like punch thing. And
right hand.
I don't know.
Yeah, a right fist.
So that was honestly my only criticism of the match. I liked her ring gear this week too. It was simple but effective. It definitely seems like they're on the right track. It was honestly seeing her slowly come together bit by bit every week and really nailing down that she's a heel now and growing as a heel reminds me of back when we were watching Alexa Bliss and Sasha Banks transition from being the mousy new girls that they weren't. They were pretty, but they weren't sure what to do with them into becoming the like strong heel characters.
Yeah.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other pro wrestling media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe in iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at pwboom.com. Once again, that's pwboom.com.
Yeah, my wife watched this with me again, and she has seen Lacey a few times, and she knew Lacey as somebody that I talked about a lot because of, like, I don't get her, or at least haven't gotten her in the past. And my wife called out that she really liked the gear, and she was like, wait, this was the former 40s pinup thing, right? Where she, like, what was that? I was like, yeah, that was her. And Kathy just, she called it out. She liked this act. And I have to say, I like the way that it's going now too. I think that if I can just go ahead and forget all of the growing pains, then this is going to be a pretty strong act and has its place on the show. Tom, go ahead.
Well, I'm very pleased to hear the favorable words. I am going to gush a little bit, although I very much enjoyed debating the merits or the dubious nature of where Lacey Evans has been, and even the quality of her music, which I'm not listening to it on iTunes, but I didn't absolutely loathe it, even though it didn't say anything about who she was. I have been a fan of her the whole time, and I've wanted for her to become, you know, if not like, I'm not saying like, oh, she should be champion because I love her so much, but at least give her a little bit more something to work with. And I absolutely agree. This is a step in the right direction. And I actually love the Woman's Right, not only because it's, you know, they have a really good name for it now, but I like how they built up to it, where we even had the conversation where we couldn't quite remember what Lacey's finisher was. And in the match that we were talking about at the time, I don't think Lacey could remember what her finisher was. And that was kind of, or you know, that's not how she would have phrased it, but that was kind of the storyline of how she discovered it. She was just at a loss, trying different things, and she threw this forearm or fist or whatever it is. I want to say it's a forearm, but maybe it's a punch. And then her opponent just goes down, and she looks around like, wow, I think they're out. I guess I'll pin them. And so, yeah, it's not flashy, but it has a bit of a narrative behind it. So I really dig that. Yes, I loved the moonsault. And I'm just going to say that I guess I like the music change, despite what I just said about her former theme. It's entirely generic, and it's probably even more generic than Hello was. But the factory iron-hitting iron sound at the beginning at least calls forth a little bit of the, like, you know, the we can do it World War II type thing that she's going for.
She's going to be feuding with Rosie the Riveter.
Well, I mean, you know, it's. Thank you for mentioning that, because I couldn't remember the name Rosie the Riveter.
But, oh, I could have brought that up for you too. I think she might be Rosie the Riveter. I think this might be where this came from. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
But like, why is Rosie the Riveter a heel? Like, she's like one of the most empowering characters in the world.
Right, and it's that the complex duality of the character, however deep you want to go with it, I suppose. I'm on board right now. I will say it's clearly not a spoiler to say that her feud with Kairi is continuing, but I will just say that I was extremely impressed with Lacey's amount of work at this particular taping. Like I mentioned, it was a 2-day taping. It was a Wednesday, Thursday. On Thursday, Lacey had to fly to DC early in the morning to go to the USO Awards with Dana Warrior and Mark Henry. So she had, I don't know how they're going to divvy it up on TV, but she had to film everything that she had for these two tapings on a single night. And this involved costume changes, and this involved multiple matches. And she, in my opinion, looked great for everything. So I'm very excited to. I was excited to see this match tonight. Side note: I also don't know who Brandi Lauren is, and I'm also excited to see the other appearances that were filmed as well. Final addendum: she had a freaking cold sore, and you didn't even know it because she didn't sell it at all. She covered it up beautifully with lipstick and makeup, and she didn't look ashamed in the least. So. I'm very high on Lacey Evans. I have been, and I am even more so now.
And if she's listening, I'm sure she's thrilled you brought up that cold sore. I'm very happy. She's like, finally. And then she gets to that point. Yeah, right. She's like, God damn it.
Watch your back at the food trucks, Tom.
Jerk that, yeah. Oh my gosh. Right. Like, so that's the jerk that was giving me the standing ovation. I'm trying to be a heel here, man.
I will say, the only thing I'll say about the Woman's Right, her finisher, is that even if the setup is right, even if the name is right and the move is right, I don't know how many times on the main roster somebody would lay down for a punch. Like, you do that for Big Show because that's what a huge guy does, but I worry about the long-term viability of this finisher, and who will lay down for it and who will not be asked to lay down for it. So
she doesn't even jump like Roman.
Yeah, another future tweet. So
now you talk about the setup. There was the little moment where, I mean, she might have stood to pause a little bit more to really present that this is what she was doing. But it definitely looked like she could have put the match away with the moonsault, and yet she lifted Brandy's shoulders. Is that what you're referring to? Because I felt like that sold it to me.
I think it is what I'm referring to. I couldn't remember it because I didn't write it down. I meant to, but I didn't. So there you go.
Yeah. I meant to say, yes, Brandi Lauren, first NXT appearance for her.
Okay.
She hasn't appeared under any other names as far as I can tell, but she had a video screen with her name on it, and she got like a televised entrance. So I don't know if she's one-time enhancement or if she's just new girl at the very bottom of the poll, and we'll see her slowly. We'll see her doing the Raul Mendoza thing over the next couple months.
And she wasn't in the backstage like for that Shayna Baszler manifesto, was she? She wasn't back there for that?
Not
there's still
to Tom.
That one mystery woman who I think is Casey Catanzaro, but we're still not completely agreed on that.
All right.
And hey, Shaza McKenzie did get a Tron graphic as well, and I'm pretty sure we all know who she is. But I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I got the impression that it was just one-time enhancement, kind of like Lady Tapa or when they brought in I don't want to call Mercedes Martinez enhancement, but yeah, they've definitely done that before.
Yeah.
Yeah. Deonna Purrazzo lost like 6 matches in NXT as enhancement.
Yeah, she did. All right. Well, there you go, Brandi Lauren. If we see you again, that's great. And we'll talk about you a lot if you're opposite Lacey Evans, that's for sure. So, all right. Tommaso and Candice, this was the opening segment. This thing is continuing and could go a lot of different ways, and I don't know what they're going to do. Tom, what'd you think here?
Very briefly, I still really like, because I don't have many new thoughts. I'm basically repeating old thoughts here. I still really like Candice being so central in the storyline. I feel like she's really the heart of this, and she's added a whole new layer that gets me reinvested in a storyline that I thought was over. Ciampa is miraculous on the mic. He does a fantastic job of shutting down people that are actually trying to support him in the crowd. Yes. And he does it in sort of an unlikable way. He doesn't use like a catchphrase that you're like, ah, ha, 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 yeah, he shut me down. I still like this guy. He does it in a way where you're like, oh boy. I will say though that I don't know how you correct this. This probably isn't even a problem. This is just the state of things. I feel like a lot, like if you pan the crowd, most of the people booing him have a smile on their face. They're like, yeah, this is what we do when this guy comes out. So there's part of me that really likes how well Ciampa plays the heel. And there's part of me that goes like, yeah, but how much of it is really getting him over as a heel? I think that people are just playing along, especially because he doesn't have music and the boos are basically his music.
Yeah. And it's playing along, like people playing along is the best case scenario, right? And what else is there? Like, because the adults are going to play along and the kids will follow suit. I mean, if that's all it is, maybe that's the best thing there is.
Maybe that's fair. Because when you calling me out for cheering Adam Cole a couple weeks ago has stuck in my mind, because I've been trying to think about it. I'm trying to think about, like, well, I like Cole and he's a heel, so should I just boo him because that's how I'm supposed to react to him? And I'm personally probably not going to, because I just feel that genuine reaction, the genuine happy enthusiasm for somebody that I like rather than dislike. But then, shoot, you look at SmackDown, and I was getting all kinds of fired up when Daniel Bryan was beating the living hell out of Big Cass, someone who I genuinely have negative feelings towards, and he has done a great, I mean, you know, say what you will about him, and I'll definitely say those things too, but whatever he's doing, it's working. So every week I'll get myself hung up on this heel issue. One day I'll be able to write a thesis on it.
Yeah, you know, and we talk about that on the show, we talk about it between shows, and is the answer to have somebody who's just brilliant at it, maybe gets cheered by some a la Kevin Owens, or is it to have somebody like Cass, who the hardcore fans legitimately don't like and don't respect in a lot of ways? And that's a harsh reality, but that's kind of the way that this goes. So is that really such a bad thing? I'm not sure it is, but we talk about that every week, so I'm just going to let that go unless Harley wants to cover it. But Harley on Tommaso and Candace.
I just really wish this was building to Ciampa versus LeRae at TakeOver Chicago.
Right? Me too.
Because I think it would be fascinating from an NXT standpoint. Here's something NXT has never done before. Here's a well-crafted, well-built, logical intergender wrestling match.
And Candace has done that a lot on the indies. The only time I ever saw her, the only time I've ever seen her in person, it was her against Chuck Taylor. This was just 4 months ago, and now they're both completely blowing up. It's awesome, but that's where I saw.
That's been the bulk of her career. I think on the indies, the thing she was most known for was teaming with Joey Ryan in an intergender tag team. And she wrestled men all the time. I think she actually said she wrestled men more than women in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. So it's like, what a perfect opportunity to do this. The NXT can do something new that they don't do. You know, they did, Becky Lynch versus James Ellsworth, but it wasn't, you know, it was presented as, oh, this is a comedy segment, as if on par with when Jim Cornette would lose his wrestler would lose a match and the good guy would get 5 minutes with the heel manager or that kind of thing.
Yeah. And they made sure Ellsworth barely got any offense.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it wasn't women's champion Hervina. Like, WWE doesn't have the best track record with with doing that very... very expertly.
But not the best track record, but that's the thing, is they do have something of a track record. We had, I want to say, Jacqueline and Chavo Guerrero feuded for a while there. China faced wrestled men all the time, right? Yeah. China was Intercontinental Champion. And over in WCW, Medusa, same thing. Medusa was in the cruiserweight division for a while there and wrestling a lot of guys. So that, I guess that's what sticks with me the most about WWE's steadfast refusal to even go anywhere near the idea of intergender wrestling is you've done it before to massive success. Like, part of the reason people are so fondly remember China is because she was Intercontinental Champion. She was in the Royal Rumble. So
there was a time where it legitimately felt like she could become WWE Champion.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, that was only like a 1 to 2 week period, but it felt that way.
Right.
Yeah. You tell me, can't you book Candice LeRae against Adam Cole and she wouldn't have a fair shot of winning the North American title?
Right. One of my dream matches is Charlotte versus AJ. I mean, why not? They're both fantastic. They're both on the same brand. So I agree. And I think it's very simple. Mia Yim put it perfectly when people, and I think she has to put it perfectly every single day because I think people challenge her on social media all the time and she's going to shut them down. People say like, well, you wear the purple nail, you do this, you know, hashtag put the nail in it. It's anti-domestic violence. And yet you go out there and wrestle men. Isn't that a conflict? And she says, no. When I was abused, it was not consensual. When I wrestle men, it's consensual. I've agreed to do it. And if I was on the fence at all about intergender wrestling, it took that phrase to make me go, oh, yeah, she's right. All right. Well, I totally will watch Tessa Blanchard versus Brian Cage in the main event of Wrestle Circus. This is fantastic.
And it's a sport, right? If you can have Billie Jean King against...
Bobby Riggs.
The guy. Nobody ever remembers the guy. No, my point is, you know, if you can have men versus women in other sports, why not in this sport, right? Why? Because it gets a little bit more physical. I don't know. So that, yeah.
But it's also a work sport where you, I'm sorry, I keep cutting you off, but it's also a work sport where you can say something like, okay, maybe don't do as many headshots because of the bad optics.
Yeah.
Do like more they did on that Saturday morning show.
Less punches, more art, mat wrestling and stuff like that, if you want to still sanitize it in a sense. But yeah, I don't know, because otherwise, where do we go with Ciampa here? He beat Ono. I thought we were heading to Ciampa and Black because Black looked really peed off when Ciampa attacked Gargano again. But now it looks like Black's maybe heading to Lars. So what, Johnny comes back and we got Johnny and Ciampa again next month? Like, that kind of, if Johnny comes back that soon, doesn't that really undercut what Ciampa did to him? I was expecting Johnny to be out for like a couple of months to really sell what Ciampa did.
You always get, because of the schedule, you get a lot of weird detours because what they were planning 4 weeks ago might not be what they're planning this week when they shoot 4 weeks at a time. So It might have seemed one way last week that is completely divergent this week, but I got the same feeling about you as you about where they're headed. So yeah, that was the Tommaso and Candice ongoing saga.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We had Raul Mendoza versus Kona Reeves. I don't know that we have a lot to say about that, but we have that. We also have Heavy Machinery and TM61 in the back. Otis giving not the best promo, but whatever. So those guys in the back. Mendoza, Reeves, Heavy Machinery, TM61. On all this, Tom, what'd you pick out?
Actually, an interesting note about Mendoza and Reeves. Now, I will say I'm currently in support of Reeves, although if I'm being completely honest, it's probably just like as a fellow human being, I want him to succeed. He's very rough around the edges. There's nothing that I blatantly dislike about his presentation, but it's just very clear that he's rough around the edges. He's a work in progress. And so my speculation is that what they've wanted to do now in the next step in his development is say, like, OK, man, we got to get you out in front of the cameras, in front of this TV crowd more regularly. Maybe you'll perform differently. Maybe you'll be able to watch back the tape and see something different, you know, in this sort of like three camera environment. That's just my speculation. My interesting note about this, at least I think it's interesting. If you have an eagle eye on the crowd, you will see different people in different seats, different people wearing different shirts. And that is because this match was filmed twice. It happened once on the Wednesday taping, and then they presented it again as the first of two dark matches on the second night. But they had the cameras. I think they always have the cameras rolling on these matches, even at the live event, so the guys can review the tape. But there must have been a couple. I was really watching this match closely to see if I could see exactly what the differences were. But I didn't really pick anything out too much, but there must have been something that they didn't like about what Kona was doing that they wanted to have him go out there and do it differently. And then they very expertly cut the matches together because it was really hard to see. The only thing that I really picked out was that he didn't say "I'm the finest" so much, whereas watching live, it was like, dude, you don't have to say that every single time you throw a punch. and he's far from the only person that does it. Big Cass does it. Nia Jax does it. EC3 is now picking up on it. When they'll do a move, but they're not in position to make the pinfall while facing the hard camera. So instead of going straight for the pin, they rotate around to make sure they're facing the hard camera. And that is one of my biggest peeves right now. But he's probably the worst offender at the moment. Anyway, I thought that was kind of interesting. So I'm currently watching Kona with an eagle eye, maybe not for the right reasons, but I do hope that he goes somewhere, man. It would be nice to see him have some success.
Yeah, it's I've followed him for quite a while. I happened to be looking at the – I know I just talked about this, but I was looking at the news story when he was first hired. So I've been watching him ever since and just wondering where his career was going to go. This has been a long time. So, you know, I'm kind of seeing this coalesce and, you know, half smiling, half cringing, thinking, where is this going to go? Is this going to work or not? And it could go either way. Harley on that match or on Heavy Machinery TM61, either thing.
So this was the first week where I all of a sudden went, wait a minute, Kona Reeves, Keanu Reeves? How did I not hear that before? Have you guys always noticed that?
I hadn't thought it just because his name came along so slowly. He was Noah Kakoa. Yeah. Yeah, and then it once it changed, I don't know.
This is my opportunity to be like, wow, I can't believe you guys weren't on it.
I didn't catch Keanu Reeves at all. But I guess I don't know. Once I see a name written down, I don't even make comparisons between the two. They seem like totally different entities.
Not even Apollo Crews?
No, not until this moment.
Oh, wow. No,
if I see it written down, I'll never think of it. I will never think of it unless I see it written down.
I kind of envy that
thing.
Yeah. This is my opportunity to say, like, of course I knew that it was similar to Keanu Reeves. Come on, guys. No, I totally did not notice it until Harley just mentioned it.
Yeah. All right. Well, were you going somewhere with that? Is this a Matrix like red pill kind of thing? Is this what's happening? All right. So yeah, Reeves goes over Mendoza because Mendoza he loses. That's what he does. He's great, but he has not won yet. He will. His time's coming. I feel strongly about that. What's that?
I don't know.
I'm hearing that too.
Tom, did you lose Harley. Him too?
Okay. Yeah, unfortunately. I know that Mendoza is well liked at the PC. So for what that's worth.
Yep. That is good. That's good. You know that from talk around the food trucks, I assume.
Yes, of course.
You and the Ely brothers talking about good old Raul. So
that's I'll quickly mention, and the reason I say that is to remind myself, as I'm not doing currently by prefacing this so much, I'm reminding myself, hey, don't talk so much. You just make your point and get out of there. Go home. I did notice, I still haven't like memorized what Marina Shafir looks like, but I did notice that when the ring crew or, you know, whoever comes out to break down the set at the end of the tapings, obviously they have a lot of wrestlers do that because NXT does a lot of cross training. Jessamyn Duke was one of those people. So, you know, another four horsewoman coming in, not getting super, super special treatment. She's part of the crew. She's learning from the ground up. So that was cool to see. The two dark matches, because I always enjoy, other than the Reeves Mendoza redo, just because I always enjoy saying what the dark matches were. The first night, it was Leo Rush versus Marcel Bartel to qualify for contendership to the North American title. Leo Rush won, and the following night he had that match against Adam Cole, and the two of them seemed, for obvious reasons, that they were very familiar with one another, and it was a fun little match.
Cool. And Cole, I imagine, did defend that title.
Took it home. since it seemed like it was a dark match, I guess it's safe to say that, yeah.
A little bit of a foregone conclusion.
You know, Leo Rush is making a music video for his song Money Money, and he's all over social media and whatnot, but I don't think he's going to be North American champion anytime soon.
I figured
I'd throw all this in there to give Harley a chance to reconnect. Do we have you again, Harley? Shucks.
Yes, we do. Oh, that was you. Okay. If Harley comes back, you know, all I've got is a couple of emails here. So if we get Harley, great. If we don't, that is a bummer, but we'll hear from him soon. Okay. Andrew Gamble, do you think Okada will ever leave NJPW for NXT/WWE? I never really hear people talk about Okada coming over like I do with people talking about Kenny or the Young Bucks. If Okada did sign, how do you think he would fare in the WWE system? Do you think Nakamura's lackluster first year on the main roster would cause Vince to be more hesitant in signing more Japanese wrestlers? Andrew, I think the answer is right there in your question. Yes, I do think that would make him more hesitant. I also don't think this would be the right move for Okada. Okada's been the champion over in New Japan for about, a year and a half, I want to say. And I think that barrier, that language barrier, unless he's hiding something that we don't know about, is too great. And people are talking about Kenny and the Young Bucks because they can immediately come over and cut promos. So that could happen. I don't know that Okada is the greatest of fits for them. I think Okada is in a perfect situation for him. Tom, I don't know if you watch New Japan as furiously as I do, but if you do, go ahead and answer.
Yeah, if you heard me chortle while you were reading the question, it's because I was interested in hearing, not that I wasn't interested in hearing what you had to say, but I was interested in hearing what Harley has to say, since I know he pays at least a little bit more attention to that than I do. I'm only very peripherally aware of it, so I don't have too many thoughts there, although I will be contrary on the Shinsuke thing. Shinsuke, I felt, was through the Dolph Ziggler feud and through the Baron Corbin feud, I felt like he was sort of dulled down on purpose, and they tried to fit him into the mid card, but we just weren't having it. We had to have the AJ feud, and they are giving it to us for better or for worse, depending on who you ask. And he's still in that main event picture. So I think that almost a year, actually, yeah, a year now on the main roster, he's remained at or toward the top. And whether or not he has met expectations, he's at least remained there. And I have to imagine that part of that is by design and as a response to the reactions that he's getting, which, you know, yeah, they flipped him heel, but that's just that much more of an improvement. So, yeah, even though we were expecting more from him, I still feel like he's had a pretty enviable first year on the main roster. So between him and Asuka, and all of these other international signees, not just Japanese, but, you know, the obviously we just saw the Saudis, and we got the Chinese and Indians, and so many, the Brazilians, too, have been in the PC for a while. We're really branching out across the world here, so even though I can't speak to Okada specifically, I personally wouldn't say that Shinsuke's first year on the main roster would be a red flag to signing another major NJPW talent.
I guess the only thing, and I think this is why people ask, is that if you had seen some of Shinsuke's work, a lot of people ask, is he unmotivated? And if you see some of the stuff he was doing in like 2012 to 15-ish, you would ask the same question. Is he unmotivated? Right. And I don't know if he's unmotivated. I think he might just kind of be old. he's getting there. Maybe that's not the only thing, and maybe he's holding something back, but it largely could be that. He's also in a very different place in a different culture than he's been for most of his life. Maybe that affects him in some way. I don't know, but I think people ask, when people ask why he's disappointing, it usually means they've seen him at his absolute best, and he isn't at his apex anymore, and that's not his fault. It's just what happens to an athlete. So I think that's largely what the problem is here.
I'm with Juan Okada.
Hey!
Oh, okay, we got him. Anything more on Okada?
Yeah, everything you said, agree. Other than that, Vince is, racist to a degree, whatever, you know. He's not Hitler, but he's you look at how black people have been booked in WWE over the years, he's racist to an extent. So I definitely think Vince feels like, you know, we've already got a Japanese guy, we've already got a couple of Japanese people on the roster, that's enough. Like, now it's time to go, you know, we can market to Japan. Now we need people. Where are some countries that we can really, like, we can make some money? That we need somebody from Brazil. We need somebody from, like, South Africa. We need, like, yeah, we got a lot of Australians already. But what other, like, hot spots can we get somebody from? That's why I feel like we've seen the Chinese recruits in Battle Royals and on, like, WrestleMania stages when they are not anywhere close to being main roster ready. But it's just like, oh, hey, look, we got a guy from China. We got that girl from Brazil.
Right. Yeah. That's absolutely fair. And I think that part of their grand plan, just because I heard them talking about this with Saudi Arabia, I say that as if I'm like a fly on the wall in their boardrooms. But, you know, hearing all the same stuff that we all hear, that they long term want to set up another performance center in Saudi Arabia. So even though those four guys that were at Greatest Royal Rumble are here in Orlando, you know, training at the PC, I'm assuming that they're already here. That's where they're going to go. I think maybe long term they want to send them back there, because I guess, you know, there's the advantage of cutting the promos in the native language. But you look at MLW, and maybe you guys haven't yet, but MLW, you're talking about how black people are characterized or booked in WWE and other nationalities and races. MLW is just an organic melting pot. They have so much excellent black talent. They have a large contingent of Latino talent, as well as some others. At their first show, they had Blasian Mia Yim. And you don't think about it. They're not presented as, oh, here's a black guy. Oh, here's a Japanese guy. They are just presented as wrestlers, and they don't have characters that pertain to their races or their nationalities. And I only just realized that recently because MLW doesn't present it in a way where you really think about it. They're just people. They are wrestlers. And that is, I think, well, obviously we all agree that that's how it should be. So
that's mostly that the case in NXT.
Still systemically in. Yeah. Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's just Raw and SmackDown when it's like, you know, oh, hey, like there's another black dude who like sings and dances.
Right.
Or
well,
like,
so long, like every black character was their character. Like they didn't give them characters because in the minds of some of the writers, black was a character already. Like
yeah,
that was right. That's just kind of the way they treated him. And that yeah. was unfortunate.
What's Apollo Crews's character?
I don't know. He smiles. He sure is a happy guy. that's what they've given him. And I had to
wake up to that a bit because for the longest time I was saying like, oh man, they all just want to be like Junkyard Dog in Mid-South. And yeah. That's great. Who wouldn't want to be like Junkyard Dog in Mid-South? I want to be like Junkyard Dog in Mid-South. And I'm completely white bread. but yeah, I convinced myself of that for a long time. It's clearly an issue. And even, you know, sorry for the tangent, but even the Street Profits, like at first, I was really into what they were doing because I thought they were tapping into something, but it hasn't really gone too much of anywhere other than just dancing. So
yeah, it feels a little Crime Time.
Well, we saw a little step forward last week. We got
true.
That it's some, they were out at a park and doing a little promo there, and that was a step in the right direction, I thought, because you can't stagnate no matter who you are. But they had done the same thing week after week for kind of a while. So, but I don't know. I'm not lumping them in with the worst of what's happened so far.
Oh, certainly not. Certainly not.
Yeah. So we've come a long way. Long way to go. Didn't know we were going to get so heavy in this episode. Like there was nothing on the show to suggest this is where we were going to go.
Just those, it's all inspired by those Hogan vibes in the air.
Right.
All those weird rumors that he might be coming back.
Oh, man. No, no, no. Okay. So, all right. That I think is our show. We've got all of that. We have I think the only thing announced for next week was the handicap match. Is that correct? Sullivan versus Dream and Ricochet. I don't think we had anything else announced.
Oh, Heavy Machinery Challenge TM6 Wonder match.
Oh, is that next week?
Yeah, I think that's what they implied.
I suppose Tom could probably tell us better than anyone. But yeah, it's it was implied. So Tom, don't say anything, but we'll go ahead and assume that that's coming next week. so that's what it is. We're going to drop our Twitter handles and we're going to get the heck out of here. Tom, go ahead.
I am at Tom Staup on Twitter, and I don't have a cute joke.
Wow, that's
I killed great. Them all. I killed them all.
All right. Harley.
On Twitter at Talking Honor.
And I am on Twitter at Spooky Milk. That is where you can find me. And next week we'll try to be a little less heavy. Thank you for your questions and thanks for all your support. Seems like you like the show, which is great because we like doing it. Cheers, everyone.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free additions to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the three times a week Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer. And there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.